Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents J.A. Johnstone's The Loner, narrated by Ken Jackson, with performances by Eric Messner, Karen Novak, Tim Carlin, Stephen Carpenter, Michael John Casey, Alexander Strain, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Mort Shelby, Thomas Keegan, Yasmin Toison, Elizabeth Jernigan, Terence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penny, Nick DePinto, Joe Brack, and Johann Detweiler. The Loner, Book 5, Rattlesnake Valley. Kid Morgan reined his horse to a halt and looked at the bleached white skull on the ground in front of him. He rested his hands on the saddle horn and leaned forward to study not only the grotesquely grinning skull, but also the two long bones laid across each other that accompanied it.
Skull and crossbones. Pirates.
More than a dozen years earlier, in what seemed like a previous, half-forgotten lifetime ago, when he had still been known as Conrad Browning, the kid had read a novel called Treasure Island. He knew about pirates and the symbol on the flags flown on their ships. The question was, what was that ominous symbol doing in the mostly arid landscape of West Texas, hundreds of miles from the sea? The kid lifted his head. Keen eyes gazed at his surroundings. A broad valley, bordered by ranges of low, brush-covered hills, fell away to his left and right, and stretched in front of him for at least 20 miles to the east before the hills closed in sharply and pinched it off, leaving only a narrow opening for the trail. Beyond the hills, what appeared to be an endless stretch of sandy wasteland was visible through the gap. Behind the kid was the pass through which he had just ridden in the rugged gray mountains that closed off the western end of the valley. In stark contrast to the desert, the mountains, and the scrubby hills, the valley itself was an unexpected oasis of green. A line of trees marked the meandering course of a river that rose from the springs in the mountains and flowed eastward, watering the rangeland on either side of it before the desert wasteland swallowed it whole at the far end of the valley. The grass that covered the range might not have been considered lush in some parts of the world, but in West Texas it certainly was. Not surprisingly, the kids saw cattle grazing here and there, hardy longhorns that not only survived, but actually thrived on the graze they found. A man who had been riding for days through sandy, rocky country that wasn't much good for anything, as the kid had, would find the sight of the valley mighty appealing. Except for the skull and crossed bones in the trail that looked for all the world like a warning to keep out. A tight smile pulled at the corners of Kid Morgan's mouth. Even before the events that had changed his life so dramatically, he had never been the sort of hombre who took kindly to being told what to do. He lifted the reins and heeled the buckskin into motion again. As he did, movement stirred within the bleached skull, visible behind the empty eye sockets. A rattlesnake suddenly crawled out through one of those sockets and coiled on the ground, raised its head, and was ready to strike. The kid's horse was used to gunfire and the smell of powder smoke, but the sound and scent of the snake spooked it. The buckskin tossed its head, shied away, and tried to rear up.
Easy, easy now.
The kid's strong left hand on the reins kept the horse under firm control. His right hand brushed his black coat aside and dipped to the Colt holstered on his hip. The snake's head exploded as the bullet found it. With his gun still in his hand, the kid dismounted. He stepped around the snake, which had a grisly red smear where its head used to be. A swift kick from the kid sent the skull bouncing into some brush. He reached down, picked up one of the long bones, and flung it off in a different direction. The other bone went sailing away with another flick of his wrist. The revulsion he had felt toward the snake was the last draw. He'd already been a little angry about being warned to keep out of the valley, and he'd given in to his irritation. He usually tried to keep his emotions under control at all times. A man who wanted to live very long in that harsh land couldn't afford to let himself be distracted by hatred or fear or loneliness. Morgan was a tall, lean young man, not yet 30, with sandy hair under a flat-crowned black hat. He wore a dusty black coat over a white shirt and black trousers that weren't tucked into his high-topped boots. His saddle was a good one, relatively new, and he carried two long guns in sheaths strapped to the horse, a Winchester, and a heavy caliber Sharps. His clothes and gear were a notch above those of the average saddle tramp, but his deeply tanned face and the slight squint around his eyes that was becoming permanent spoke of a man who spent most of his time outdoors. That hadn't always been the case. Once he had spent his days either in an office or a mansion, depending on whether or not he felt like working. As Conrad Browning, he had grown up among the wealthy on Boston's Beacon Hill, had attended the finest academies and universities, had taken his place in the business world, and owned stakes in mines, railroads, and shipping companies. He was rich, with probably more money than he could spend in the rest of his life. None of that meant a damn thing after his wife was murdered. He avenged her death by tracking down and killing the men responsible for it, and chose not to return to his old life as the business tycoon Conrad Browning. Instead, he held on to the new identity he had created in his quest for vengeance, that of the gunfighter known as Kid Morgan. For months now, he had roamed the Southwest, riding alone for the most part, not searching for trouble, but not avoiding it when it came to him, as it seemed it inevitably did. For a while, a young woman he'd met during some trouble in Arizona had traveled with him. But she had stayed behind in Santa Fe to make a new life for herself, while he continued drifting eastward into Texas. That was better, the kid thought. It was easier not to get hurt when you didn't allow anyone to get too close to you. The kid reached for the buckskin's reins.
Don't move, mister.
The kid looked over his shoulder and saw a woman coming out of a nearby clump of boulders. She had a Winchester leveled at him.
Don't even twitch a muscle or you'll be damn sorry.
Take it easy.
The woman didn't. The kid looked down and saw a dead rattler at his feet. He hadn't seen it slither out from among the rocks bordering the trail, but there it was, and it very easily could have sunk its fangs in his leg. The woman's shot hadn't been quite as clean as the kid's. Her bullet had ripped away a good chunk of flesh from the snake's body just behind its head, a gaping wound from which crimson blood gushed, but the head was still intact and attached to the body. The mouth was open and ready to bite, and the kid knew that dying or not, the venom was still there, and the creature was as dangerous as ever. He lifted his foot and brought the heel of his boot crunching down on the snake's head. He looked over at the woman, who had lowered the rifle.
Thanks for the warning.
I shot the blasted thing.
Yes, but you didn't kill it.
You know how hard it is to hit the head of a snake when it's moving?
The kid smiled and made a casual gesture toward the second reptile carcass that lay on the ground nearby.
Apparently I do.
The woman came forward and looked at the snake the kid had shot.
That first shot I heard?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
The kid could have said the same thing about her appearance, as well as her shooting. She was in her early 20s, he estimated, with curly golden hair pulled back behind her head. She wore a low-crowned brown hat with its strap taut under her chin. Her skin had a healthy tan, a little lighter in shade than her hair. She wore a brown vest over a white shirt and a brown riding skirt and boots. She didn't look like the side saddle type. She still held the Winchester, and while the rifle wasn't pointed at the kid, she carried it with an easy assurance that said she could swing the barrel toward him again very quickly if she needed to.
Who are you?
The name's Morgan.
Why'd you kick that skull into the brush? The poor hombre it belonged to never did you any harm.
I know. I took it as a warning to keep out of the valley, and I don't like being told where I can and can't go.
A warning is exactly what it was, and you were foolish to disregard it. But if you were bound and determined to do that, why didn't you just ride around it?
I wanted whoever put it there to know how I felt. It was you, wasn't it?
Do I look like the sort of person to do something like that?
I don't know. That's why I asked. You're the one who just told me I'd be making a big mistake if I rode on into the valley.
Well, for your information, I didn't put those bones there. I'm not the one you have to worry about. It's...
Her head came up in a listening attitude. Alarm leaped into her eyes. The kid heard it, too. Hoofbeats that were approaching too fast. Half a dozen riders swept around a stand of thick brush about 50 yards away and thundered toward them. There was nothing the kid could do except stand his ground. He had 6 rounds in his Colt, which meant it was possible to kill all 6 of the strangers, if he was damn lucky. But the young woman was armed too, he reminded himself, and if she could account for one or two of them, he might be able to get the rest. Of course, he would probably die too, and so would she. But it was better to go down fighting and take as many of your enemies with you as you could. Maybe it wouldn't come to that, he thought, as the riders reined in. Although, from the looks of the bunch, they were no strangers to killing. The man who sat his horse a little in front of the others was a big hombre, tall and broad-shouldered with brawny arms. The sleeves of his blue shirt were rolled up over forearms matted with dark hair. More hair curled from the open throat of the shirt. A beard jutted from his belligerent jaw. A gray hat was cuffed to the back of his head. He wore a pair of pearl-handled revolvers. Cruel, deep-set eyes studied the kid from sunken pits under bushy eyebrows. The apparent leader was the biggest of the bunch, but the man who rode to his right was almost as large. His slab-like jaw bristled with rusty stubble and a handlebar mustache of the same shade twisted over his mouth. As he took off the battered old derby he wore and used it to fan away some of the dust that had swirled up from the horse's hooves as they came to a stop, the kid saw that the man was totally bald. The thick muscles of his arms and shoulders stretched the faded red fabric of the upper half of the set of long underwear he wore as a shirt. Double bandoliers of ammunition crisscrossed over his barrel-like chest. He held a Winchester in his right hand. To the leader's left was a smaller man dressed all in gray, from his hat to his boots. His size didn't make him seem any less dangerous. Those rattlers the kid had killed hadn't been very big either, but they were deadly nonetheless. In fact, the dark eyes in the man's lean, pockmarked face had a reptilian look about them. The kid noted how the man's hand never strayed far from the butt of the pistol on his hip. The other three men were more typical hard cases, the sort of gun wolves that the kid had encountered on numerous occasions. He didn't discount their threat, but the trio that edged toward him and the young woman garnered most of his attention. He'd kill the big bearded man first if it came to that, he decided. Then the little hombre in gray, and then the bald-headed varmint. Once the three of them were dead, he'd use what was left of his life to try for the others. He was pretty sure he'd have some lead in him by that point, though. White teeth suddenly shone brilliantly in the leader's beard as he grinned.
Been stomping some snakes, huh?
That's right. Looks like you've got some diamondbacks around here.
Hell yeah, we do. Why do you think they call this Rattlesnake Valley?
I didn't know they did.
You're a stranger to these parts, huh? You should have warned your friend what he was getting into, Diana.
He's not my friend. I never saw him before until a few minutes ago.
Is that so? And here I thought your uncle had gone and hired himself a fast gun.
He's a stranger here, Malone. Why don't you let him just turn around and ride away?
Why, who's stopping him? You just go right ahead and mount up, mister. We wouldn't want to keep you from going back to wherever you came from.
The kid had a feeling that if he got on the buckskin and headed west through the pass, he wouldn't make it 20 yards before he had a bullet in his back.
What if I want to ride on down the valley?
Well, I ain't so sure that'd be a good idea. We got all the people we need in the valley right now.
It's a public road, isn't it?
Not exactly. There's supposed to be a marker here, so folks will know they're entering Trident Range, and they'd be better off turning around.
That's not true. The boundaries of your ranch don't extend this far, Malone. You're claiming range that doesn't belong to you.
I don't like being called a liar, even by a pretty girl like you, Miss Starbird.
The kid had noticed the brand on the horses the men rode. It was a line that branched and curved into three points.
Neptune's trident.
You know of it?
Neptune was the Roman god of the sea, and he was usually depicted carrying a trident like the one you're using as a brand. The Greeks call him Poseidon.
I didn't expect to run into a man who knows the classics out here in the middle of this godforsaken wilderness.
The kid didn't waste time explaining about his education. He knew that he and Diana were still balanced on the knife edge of danger from those men. Yet there was something about Malone, something about the way he looked at Diana, that told he didn't want to hurt the young woman. The kid's own fate was another story. He had a hunch Malone would kill him without blinking an eye, if the whim struck to do so.
Is there a town in the valley?
Aye, Bristol, about 15 miles east of here.
I need to replenish my supplies. My horse could use a little rest before I ride on. I'm not looking for trouble from you or anyone else, Malone. Just let me ride on to the settlement, and in a few days I'll be gone.
Are you sure Owen Starbird didn't send for you?
Never heard of him until now.
Well...
Malone scratched at his beard and hesitated, as if he were considering what the kid had said. While that was going on, the little man in gray turned his horse from the trail and started riding around the area, his eyes directed toward the ground as if he were searching for something. After a moment, he found it. He reined in, dismounted, and reached into the brush to pick up the skull. He turned and held it up to show the others.
Look at this, Terrence.
My marker. Part of it, anyway.
Only one set of fresh tracks coming from the west, Terrence, and the bones were there earlier. I seen them with my own eyes.
That means you disturbed my marker, mister. What is your name, anyway?
It's Morgan.
I've been known to let travelers use this trail, Mr. Morgan, if they can pay tribute. I'm afraid I can't do that with you, though.
Just as well, because I don't intend to pay you one red cent.
Destroying my marker is like a slap in the face, Morgan, and I can't allow you to go unpunished for that. You can go on down the trail, but you'll have to go past either Greavy...
He nodded to the small, gray-clad gunman.
...or Wolfram.
A jerk of the bearded chin indicated the bald-headed man.
Guns or fists, Morgan. It's up to you.
Wolfram held up his right hand and opened and closed it into a fist as he grinned at the kid. He flexed those strong, knobby-knuckled fingers. Greavy's face was cold and expressionless. He was clearly the fast gun of the bunch. The kid was confident that he could beat Greavy to the draw. But if he did, that didn't mean the others would let him pass. They might just use the shooting as an excuse to kill him. But if he took on the bruiser called Wolfram and bested him in single combat, that might be different. The rest of them might be impressed enough by such a victory to let him go. More importantly, such an outcome wouldn't expose Diana Starbird to the danger of flying bullets.
I have your word of honor that if I defeat one of them, you'll allow me to ride on to Bristol?
Word of honor. You hear that? If Morgan lives, no one bothers him. Today.
And Miss Starbird comes with me. Either to the settlement or wherever else she wants to go.
Diana knows I'd never harm a hair on her head. And none of my men would dare to do so either. I think the world of her.
Then you wouldn't want to hold her against her will, would you?
You don't have to do this on my account, Mr. Morgan. I'll be all right.
You don't want to stay here, do you?
Well, no.
Then you're coming with me.
It's mighty confident you are that you're going to live through this. Greave is a talented man with a gun. And I seen Wolfram break bigger fellows than you in half with his bare hands.
I'll risk it.
The kid took off his hat and handed it to Diana, who had a worried look on her face as she took it. The kid didn't want to demonstrate his own gun-handling prowess just yet, since it might come in handy later if he needed to take them by surprise. So he unbuckled his gun belt and handed it to the young woman as well. Then he stripped off his coat and dropped it on the ground.
I'll take on Wolfram.
Grinning, Wolfram slid the rifle he carried into its saddle boot and swung down from the back of his horse. He didn't wear a handgun, but he had a knife sheathed at his waist. He removed the sheath from his belt and tucked it into a saddlebag, then took off his derby and hung it on the saddle horn.
I'm gonna enjoy this.
He turned toward the kid, who was rolling up his sleeves, while Diana stood there looking more frightened by the second. Wolfram started forward, moving at a slow, deliberate pace as he approached the kid. He was still grinning and flexing his fists. The kid stood there, arms at his sides, apparently waiting calmly, even though his blood surged at the prospect of battle. Wolfram charged without warning, swinging a mallet-like fist at the kid's head with surprising quickness. The kid ducked under the looping punch that Wolfram threw and sprang aside from the bull-like charge. Wolfram's momentum carried him past his intended victim. The kid whirled toward him and threw a hard right at Wolfram's jaw. It landed cleanly and rocked his head back and forth. Wolfram went down hard, his face diving into the dirt. The kid leapt on top of Wolfram, digging both knees into the small of the man's back as hard as he could. That gave the kid the chance to slide his right arm around Wolfram's neck from behind. He grabbed his right wrist with his left hand and hung on for dear life as he tightened the pressure on his opponent's throat. He kept his knees planted in Wolfram's back. The kid forced Wolfram's head back harder and harder, and knew that if he kept it up, sooner or later the man's spine would crack. Suddenly, he felt Wolfram's muscles go limp. Either the man had lost consciousness, or he was trying to trick the kid into relaxing that death grip. The kid wasn't going to be fooled. The muscles of his arms and shoulders bunched. One more good heave would break the bastard's neck. The kid's head jerked up. He saw that Malone had dismounted and loomed over him, blotting out the sun as he aimed one of those pearl-handled revolvers at the kid's head. Smoke curled from the barrel as a result of the warning shot Malone had fired.
Let him go! You're gonna kill him! Let him go, Morgan!
He would have killed me if he could.
I reckon that's right, but I got the gun, and I'm telling you to let him go. You've been partners too long for me to let you just snap his neck like that.
You'll keep your word and let me and Miss Starbird go on to Bristol?
Aye, go and be damned.
The kid eased his grip on Wolfram's throat, then released it entirely. The man's head slumped forward into the dirt. He was out cold, all right, not chamming. But he was still alive. With an effort, the kid climbed to his feet. He reached out to Diana as she came closer to him, took the gun belt from her, and buckled it around his hips. The weight of the holstered Colt felt good to him.
For your own benefit, you ought to keep moving instead of stopping in Bristol. There's no place in this valley that'll be safe for you after today.
And if I see you or any of your men again, I might as well go ahead and shoot on sight. Is that what you're telling me?
Malone's lips twisted in a snarl, but he didn't say anything else. He slid his gun back into leather, then bent to grasp one of Wolfram's arms. Without being told to, a couple of the hard cases dismounted and hurried over to help their boss hoist Wolfram's senseless form back on his feet. Wolfram began to come to, shaking his head groggily. The kid took his hat from Diana and put it on, then picked up his coat, folded it, and stuck it in his saddlebags. The sun was too hot for the garment.
Where's your horse?
She inclined her head toward the boulders where she had been hidden as she watched him kick the skull off the trail. He figured he hadn't heard her ride up because the echoes of his shot had been rolling away over the hills at the time.
Go get it.
Not until they're gone.
He understood what she meant. She believed that Malone would be less likely to break his word and try to gun the kid down as long as she was close by. She was probably right about that. He stood there, holding the buckskin's reins in his left hand, and kept his right close to his gun. Greavy kept a close eye on the kid while Malone and his men helped Wolfram climb onto his horse. The kid had a feeling that Greavy sensed the presence of another fast gun. He saw the appraisal and the challenge in the little man's eyes. Greavy was trying to figure out if he could take the kid. Once Wolfram was mounted again, Malone swung up onto his own saddle and motioned for his men to follow suit. They turned their horses around and started jogging away, following the trail that led through the valley. They rounded a bend and rode out of sight.
You think they'll try to find a place to pull an ambush?
Not now. Black Terrence keeps his word. Most of the time.
The kid glanced over at her and lifted an eyebrow. Diana waved a hand.
I'll explain on the way to Diamondback.
Diamondback?
The ranch my uncle and I own.
I was headed for Bristol, remember?
Not anymore. It won't be safe for you. I'm pretty sure Malone has spies working for him in town. Anyway, there are a lot of alleys where bushwhackers could hide.
You don't owe me anything, if that's what you're thinking.
Me owe you anything? It's the other way around, Mr. Morgan. If I hadn't been here, Malone and his men would have killed you. It was your shot that drew him in the first place. When you saw the skull and crossbones, why didn't you just turn around and ride away? Don't you know what they mean? They mean death.
I've seen plenty of it. Let's get your horse.
You'll come to the ranch with me?
Why not? The main thing I wanted was a chance to rest my buckskin. I reckon I can do that at your place as well as I can in town.
Better. Our hands will take good care of your horse.
They fetched her mount, a fine-looking chestnut, from the rocks where she had left it. She put her foot in the stirrup and stepped up into the saddle with a lithe grace that didn't surprise the kid. From everything he had seen so far, he guessed that she had been born and raised in West Texas. He knew a Western girl when he saw one. As they started along the trail, he kept his eyes peeled for any sign of trouble, just in case Diana was wrong about Malone and his men trying to ambush them. The range seemed peaceful enough, though.
Where is this Diamondback Ranch?
Everything in the valley north of the Severn River is Diamondback Range.
The Severn, huh?
That was the name of a river in England, he recalled, and Bristol, of course, was an English town. He wondered if that meant anything. He had been to England, and while Rattlesnake Valley certainly wasn't as dry and barren as most of West Texas, it was still a far cry from the lush, green English countryside. Diana didn't offer any explanations. She was watchful, too, as if she didn't have complete confidence in her assurances that Malone wouldn't attack them.
Why the skull and crossbones? I know they put it on the labels of liquids that are poisonous, but I never saw anybody use it as a road marker before.
It's a symbol from the pirate flag. I suppose Malone thinks it's appropriate.
Appropriate? Are you telling me that...
Black Terrence Malone is a pirate. At least, he used to be. And just because he's not on the high seas anymore doesn't mean he's any less of a brigand.
You're going to have to explain that. I suppose it has something to do with Malone being known as Black Terrence.
That's right. 20 years ago, Malone was a pirate in the Caribbean Sea. He'd been a sailor on a blockade runner for the Confederacy during the War of Northern Aggression. And after the war was over, he took what he learned and put it to use for himself. He got a ship, gathered a crew of like-minded men, and started raiding the shipping lanes. He looted and sunk a number of British cargo vessels. The Royal Navy sent warships after him. But Malone had learned how to dodge pursuit so effectively that he was able to avoid capture for several years.
But they finally got him?
That's right. HMS Scorpion, commanded by Captain Owen Starbird, sunk Malone's ship and fished him and the other survivors from his crew out of the water.
Your uncle?
That's right.
The one who owns this Diamondback Ranch where you're taking me?
Actually, he only owns half of it. The other half is mine. But Uncle Owen has been running things ever since my father died and left the spread to us.
The kids' keen eyes habitually checked their surroundings again, but didn't see any sign of danger. Some birds flew overhead, but their pace was lazy. Nothing had spooked them.
Keep talking.
Why? You don't actually deserve an explanation, you know. It's not like I owe you anything.
Just call it curiosity.
Downright nosiness, if you ask me.
I've been known to poke my nose where it doesn't necessarily belong.
Well, don't think that you're gonna get in the middle of this fracas. If you're smart, you'll mind your own business and get out of Rattlesnake Valley as fast as you can.
Then tell me what I'll be running away from.
All right. My father was George Starbird. He was his father's third son. Uncle Owen was the second. You know what that means?
The law of primogeniture. Neither of them could inherit the family title and estate because they weren't the firstborn son.
How'd you know that?
I've done some reading in my time. I suppose that's why your uncle went into the Royal Navy and your father immigrated to America. British nobility tends not to want those second and third sons hanging around and maybe doing something to embarrass the family.
That's exactly right. The two of them had to get out and make lives for themselves. My father could have gone into the military or the diplomatic service, but he decided that he wanted the adventure of coming to the United States. His family gave him enough money to get here.
So he was a remittance man?
No. They didn't keep paying him to stay out of sight and out of mind. They paid for his passage over here, and that was it. He wanted to come west, so he worked at odd jobs and finally saved enough to take a train from New York to Pittsburgh. From there, he got a job on a steamship that carried freight up and down the Ohio River. That eventually got him to the Mississippi, and a similar job there. And then he joined a wagon train heading for Santa Fe. He did a little bit of everything. Fur trapping, packing for the army, prospecting, things like that. And during the war, he left New Mexico territory and came here, to West Texas. It was a pretty wild place then.
I've heard stories.
He'd saved enough money to buy a small, failed ranch here in what was already called Rattlesnake Valley. It was a different place then. The stream was dry most of the year, and even when there was water in it, there wasn't enough to grow grass to support a herd of cattle. But my father had the idea that if there was a little water, there might be more at the source. He'd had some classes in the natural sciences before he left England, and thought the stream bed looked like it had once been larger. He traced the stream bed up to the mountains and found the springs that fed it. Sure enough, sometime in the past, a rock slide had partially blocked the springs, so that only a small trickle of water was getting out through the rocks. He worked for months, by himself, clearing the slide. And finally, the river was flowing again the way it once had. That was when the valley began to green up and started becoming the fine place to live and raise cattle that it is today.
How did he wind up owning all the range in the valley north of the river?
My father was a canny man, Mr. Morgan, and a stubborn one. He had a dream, and he came to believe that Rattlesnake Valley was where it would be fulfilled. With every penny he could scrape up, he bought more land before he got the river flowing again. It was a gamble, but he borrowed money, worked for other men, did anything and everything he could to acquire more range, because he believed it would be valuable someday. Then suddenly, he was right. He became a rich man almost overnight when the wilderness began to bloom.
The kid nodded. Some people would look at a man like George Starbird and think that he must have been lucky, that he didn't really deserve the success he'd had. They would be jealous because they didn't see, or chose not to see, the years of hard work and preparation that Starbird had put in before fortune ever smiled on him.
There was no settlement in the valley then, so he founded Bristol, naming it after a city near the place he'd grown up in England.
I reckon that's how the river got its name too.
That's right. My father loved this country and was glad he came here, but he still had a lot of fondness for his homeland.
Can't blame a man for that.
Starting up the town made father even wealthier. He was still a young man, though, and he realized he was missing something.
A wife.
Exactly. One of the men who came to Bristol to start a store when it was nothing more than a cluster of tents and shacks had a daughter. And when my father met her, he knew she was the one he wanted. Luckily for me, she felt the same way about him. They were married less than 6 months later, and in time, I came along.
No brothers or sisters?
Nah. A fever took her when I was less than 2 years old.
I'm sorry.
I never knew her. All I've seen are pictures of her. And the way my father's eyes were always haunted by her loss. But my father had a ranch to run and a daughter to raise, so he set about doing both of those things to the best of his ability.
I had a feeling you were born and raised out here, from the way you ride and handle a rifle.
I was riding before I could walk, and shooting not long after that. My father didn't raise me to be the son he never had, or anything like that. But he wanted me to be sure I could take care of myself. I can, you know.
The kid didn't doubt it.
I'm surprised he didn't wind up owning the entire valley. Seems like it would have been easy enough for him to do.
It would have, but he didn't want to. He said he had plenty of range for his own needs, and that if somebody else wanted to work hard and make something for themselves, they ought to have the chance. He didn't try to stop anyone from coming into the valley and starting up small spread south of the river, and he never hogged the water or anything like that. He was a good man, Mr. Morgan. If you want to boil everything down to its basics, it's right there. He was a good man.
He sounds like it. But he wasn't immortal, was he?
No. He wasn't immortal.
What happened?
You're really curious, aren't you?
I mean, no offense, but you started this story and I'd like to hear the end of it.
I suppose I can't blame you for that. It's only been a couple years and still hurts. My father knew how to handle horses as well as anybody I ever saw. But that didn't help him one day when one of those damn snakes slithered right under the hooves of the horse he was riding, right outside the barn. It took them both by surprise. The horse went up in the air and my father came out of the saddle. Broke his neck when he landed. He lived for about 8 hours before passing away that night.
That's a rough thing.
Could have been worse. At least I got a chance to say goodbye to him. And he had a chance to tell me that he'd already sent for Uncle Owen to come and settle on Diamondback after he retired from the Royal Navy. It was supposed to be a surprise for me. Well, it was all right.
How does this tie in with Malone? He went to prison for being a pirate, I reckon.
Of course he did. But he didn't go to the gallows. He and his men always spared the crews of the ships they captured. He was behind bars for 18 years. He was released not long after Uncle Owen retired from the Royal Navy.
And he came here to settle the score for all those years he was locked up.
That's right, Mr. Morgan. Black Terrence Malone came here to hoist the Jolly Roger over West Texas and destroy Owen Starbird.
The kid looked at her and tried not to laugh at that Jolly Roger comment. It was obvious that she was dead serious in what she had just said.
So Malone tracked your uncle to this valley, then came here and bought a ranch.
The Bar SW. Old Silas Wilmot's place. Silas passed away about a year and a half ago. A few months after that, Malone showed up with a title to the place. He bought it from Silas's heirs, who live up in Dallas.
If he was legally released from prison in England, there's nothing stopping him from doing something like that.
I know. Uncle Owen told me not to worry about it. He said that Malone was just trying to make him nervous. But Malone brought some of his old crew of cutthroats with him, men like Wolfram and Greavy. And he hired more men whose hands didn't get calluses from using a rope, if you know what I mean.
Does he have any actual punchers?
A few, enough to handle the small herd that was left on the Bar SW. Of course, since Malone changed the brand to the Trident, his herd has grown some.
Rustling?
That's what Uncle Owen and I believe. Our herds have shrunk steadily while Malone's has been growing. You can draw your own conclusions.
Has the law tried to do anything about it?
Malone's too slick. Nobody's been able to catch him breaking the law. Anyway, there's just a single deputy sheriff in Bristol, sent down from the county seat to handle the whole valley. He can't be everywhere at once.
Has anything else odd been going on?
Would you call having several Diamondback hands being bushwhacked odd? Two of them are dead, and the others were wounded. The shootings always happened when one of our men was out on the range alone. The hands have stopped riding by themselves. They always go out in groups now. But that means we're spread pretty thin. Hasn't helped that some of our men have quit. You can't blame them for leaving this part of the country, though. No one wants to get shot down from an ambush.
As she described it, it was a bad situation, all right. The kid had heard Frank Morgan talk about similar setups. Even the biggest rancher could be brought low by rustlers, chipping away at his herds and demoralizing his crew into quitting. From the sound of it, Owen Starbird had plenty of trouble on his plate. Starbird's trouble was none of his business, though, the kid told himself. He had felt an instinctive dislike for Malone, Greavy, and Wolfram, but that was no reason for him to hang around Rattlesnake Valley and involve himself in the dangerous conflicts going on there. He and Diana had reached a trail that veered off to the north from the main road. Diana turned her chestnut onto it. He had a hunch this trail led to the headquarters of Diamondback. A few minutes later, they came to the river. The stream spread out about 60 feet wide between grassy banks, and it was shallow enough that the kid could see the gravel bed. The water jumped and bubbled around some rocks that jutted up 50 yards downstream. The Severn was a nice little river, and since it was spring-fed, it had a good steady flow. The kid and Diana forded it with ease, then continued northward.
How does Malone get away with trying to block off the trail into the valley?
In the time he's been here, he's bought some other small spreads and expanded his ranch. The trail cuts through part of his range, and he takes that to mean that he controls the entire length of it.
There's no legal basis for that. Folks out here always have a right of free passage.
Traditionally, maybe. I suppose if he wanted to, he could fence off just the part of the trail that's on his land and charge a toll to use it. That's what Uncle Owen thinks, anyway. But Malone's not really interested in doing that. He just wants to intimidate everyone in the valley and make sure that they're too scared to stand up to him while he goes after Diamondback. There were a couple small ranchers who spoke out against Malone, and they wound up with their barns being burned down in the middle of the night and their horses shot up. It's just pure luck no one has been killed except for a couple of our men.
Sounds to me like Malone's just running roughshod over folks around here.
That's what he's doing, Mr. Morgan. That's exactly what he's doing. And so far, Uncle Owen and I are really the only ones who are trying to fight him.
The kid looked around. They were passing through gently rolling hills dotted with stands of trees and an occasional rocky outcropping. It was good range, he thought, and well worth fighting for. He could understand why Diana and her uncle would stand up to Malone and his reign of terror. They needed help, though, from the other people in the valley, and evidently they weren't getting it.
What are you doing riding alone up there around the pass?
I told you. I can take care of myself. I don't let Malone dictate where I can ride.
Yeah, I sort of felt the same way when I saw that skull and crossbones in the trail.
I'd ridden up there to check on an old Indian who lives in the mountains. He befriended my father years ago when my father first came to the valley. That was another thing my father asked me to do while he was dying. To look after his old friend.
That's an admirable thing to do. Maybe you should take some guards with you next time, though.
That's not necessary. Malone won't hurt me.
How do you know that? Seems to me like hurting you would be a good way for him to get back at your uncle.
No, he has something even more diabolical than that in mind. He wants to marry me. When Malone first showed up, he rode over to our ranch by himself. He said he'd heard about me in town and decided to come courting. He announced then and there that he intended to marry me and combine Diamondback and Trident. I wish Uncle Owen had gone ahead and shot him right then and there. Ever since then, every time Malone catches me alone, he tries to seduce me.
That's another good reason you shouldn't ride out alone.
You're not my father or my uncle, Mr. Morgan. In fact, a couple of hours ago, I'd never laid eyes on you. So I don't much like the idea of you telling me what to do.
Just offering an opinion, that's all. You're free to take it for what it's worth, or not.
They rode along in tense silence for a few more minutes, then topped a rise and looked at a big whitewashed two-story house surrounded by cottonwoods and flanked by barns, corrals, a bunkhouse, and other outbuildings.
That's it. Diamondback.
Looks like a fine spread.
It is. The finest in this part of Texas. That's why Uncle Owen and I are damned if we'll let Black Terrence Malone buffalo us.
The kid had liked Diana on sight, and although she could be a mite testy, he liked her even more since he had gotten to know her a little. That didn't mean he was going to involve himself in her troubles, though. Diana and her uncle could handle Malone, he thought. They had this big ranch and a crew that was probably pretty tough. Frontiersmen fought their own battles, stomped their own snakes. That thought made a smile pull at his mouth. Even though he had crushed that second rattler's skull, if Diana hadn't plugged it first with her rifle, the scaly creature might have gotten it. He supposed he owed her a little something for that. She had offered him the hospitality of her home, too, declaring that he would be safer there than in Bristol. Considering all that, he wasn't sure he could ride away and leave her to the mercy of Terrence Malone. As they rode up to the ranch headquarters, some men walked out of the barn. The kid noticed immediately that they were all armed with handguns, and two of them carried Winchesters. A display of that much armament so close to home meant that there was trouble in those parts, all right. A stocky man with a bushy gray mustache came over to them as they reined their horses to a halt in front of the house.
Hello, Sam.
Miss Diana?
The man touched the brim of his old battered black hat. He nodded toward the kid.
Who's the stray?
This is Mr. Morgan. Mr. Morgan, Sam Rocklin, our foreman.
Pleased to meet you, mister. If I may ask, where'd you run into Miss Diana?
Out on the western trail, just below the pass. Malone put a skull and crossbones in the trail.
What? Why, that mangy...
The kid, Diana, and Sam Rocklin all turned their heads to look in the direction of the sound. The screen door swung open, and a man levered his bulky body out onto the porch using a pair of crutches that supported his heavy torso where his wasted legs could not. The man had iron gray hair and a precisely clipped mustache. His weathered, ruddy face spoke of a life lived outdoors, in Owen Starbird's case, on the sea. He wore boots, jeans, and a cowhide vest over a butternut shirt, but his bearing made the range clothes look like a uniform.
You didn't tell me you were leaving, Diana. I'd appreciate being kept informed of such things. I was quite concerned about your well-being.
I would think you'd know by now, Uncle Owen, that I come and go as I please.
Starbird switched his eagle-eyed gaze to the kid.
Who's this?
Mr. Morgan. I'm afraid I don't know his first name.
Just call me Kid.
Kid Morgan. That sounds like a name from one of your lurid American dime novels.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Starbird.
Captain Starbird. Even though I'm retired, I'm still entitled to use my rank.
Fine. Pleased to meet you, Captain.
Diana, what's going on here? Who is this man? Where have you been?
That's a lot of questions. And the sun's hot.
Diana swung down from the saddle.
Let's go inside where it's cooler. Please come in, Mr. Morgan.
I appreciate the hospitality.
Sam, would you see to Mr. Morgan's horse?
Sure thing, Miss Diana. We'll take good care of your horse, mister.
The kid handed over the reins. Diana gave Rocklin the reins to her chestnut as well, and he led both mounts toward the barn. The kid waved a hand toward the steps leading up to the porch.
After you, Miss Starbird.
I don't recall inviting you in, sir.
This is as much my house as it is yours, Uncle Owen, and I intend to be hospitable to Mr. Morgan. We had a run-in with Malone and some of his men.
Malone? My God, are you all right? Did that that blasted pirate hurt you?
I'm fine.
Diana and the kid reached the welcome shade of the porch.
Mr. Morgan had a tussle with Wolfram, though.
And you're still alive?
Apparently.
Wolfram is a monster. In the old days, he was the most feared of Malone's crew of cutthroats. After Black Terence himself, of course. No offense, Morgan, but I find it difficult to accept the idea that a man such as yourself bested him.
You can believe it. I saw it with my own eyes. Malone gave Mr. Morgan the choice of going up against Wolfram or drawing against Greavy.
Greavy? That one's a bad lot, too. Oh, well, come inside. As Diana said, we might as well be where it's cooler.
The kid followed them into the house and found himself in a big, well-appointed room. Indian rugs covered the floor. The sofas and chairs were made of thick wooden beams and upholstered with leather-covered cushions. A massive fireplace filled half of one wall, and above the mantel, the heads of elk, antelope, and mountain goats were mounted, along with a tawny mountain lion with its teeth bared in the midst of a snarl. The kid figured George Starbird had bagged those trophies, although having seen Diana handle a rifle, it wouldn't have surprised him if she turned out to be responsible for a few of them. A heavy-set Mexican woman came into the room through a door that led to the rest of the house.
Bring us some cool lemonade, Carmelita.
Sí, Capitán.
Starbird made his way over to a wheelchair, turned, and lowered himself into it. He set his crutches aside, then picked up each leg in turn and placed his feet on the footrests attached to the chair. Starbird placed his hands on his knees and frowned at Diana.
Now, tell me what happened.
She sat down in one of the heavy chairs and gestured for the kid to take a seat on a sofa that was positioned at a right angle to the chair.
I rode over to the mountains to check on Greyhawk and make sure he was all right.
That impudent old Yaki. Of course he's all right. He's like an ancient lizard. Nothing bothers him.
Still, I promised Father I'd look in on him from time to time. You know that, Uncle Owen.
Go on. Get to the part about Malone.
I'm getting there. I was on my way back from Greyhawk's place when I heard a shot somewhere close by. I thought it might be some of Malone's men trying to ambush me, so I hid in some rocks near the trail. But then I saw Mr. Morgan and realized that he had fired the shot.
You tried to ambush my niece, sir?
Nothing of the sort. He just shot a snake. Very skillfully, too. He blew its head right off.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. There are two blasted many of those serpents in this valley.
Sounds like you need a visit from St. Patrick.
You're familiar with the legend of how he charmed all the snakes out of Ireland?
Mr. Morgan seems to be surprisingly well-read, Uncle Owen.
Get on with the story.
I saw that someone had put a skull and crossbones in the trail, almost certainly as a warning for strangers to keep out of the valley.
That sounds like Malone's work.
I thought the same thing. Then Mr. Morgan kicked the skull out of the trail and threw the bones into the brush.
You did that?
I didn't like the looks of those bones. It seemed awfully presumptuous to me.
Starbird's gaze rested squarely on the kid for a moment. And then for the first time, a bit of humor flashed in the former naval officer's stern eyes.
I never cared much for the bloody symbol myself. Begging your pardon, Diana?
That's all right, Uncle Owen. I heard worse cussing from the ranch hands by the time I was five.
I dare say you did. What happened after Mr. Morgan disposed of the skull and crossbones?
I had to shoot another rattler that had crawled up without him noticing it.
So my niece saved your life, Morgan?
That's right.
The shots drew Malone's attention, though. He came galloping up with Wolfram Greavy and three of those hard cases who ride for him. I talked him into letting Mr. Morgan turn around and ride back out of the valley.
I see you didn't take that opportunity.
I ride where I please.
So you clashed with Wolfram and lived to tell the tale. Very impressive, young man. Who taught you how to fight?
Not who. What?
I beg your pardon?
It wasn't a person who taught me how to fight. It was the whole world.
Ah, experience, huh? School of hard knocks and all that.
That's right.
Malone gave his word that if Mr. Morgan won, no one would bother him, but only for today. Mr. Morgan was planning to ride on to Bristol, but I convinced him to come here to Diamondback instead.
A wise choice, sir. I fear that Bristol isn't the same town it was when my brother founded it. Too many undesirable elements have moved in. The area has a growing reputation for lawlessness, primarily because Malone has gotten away with murder and rustling. Our lone deputy in the valley is overmatched.
Have you sent word to the Rangers?
A letter has gone to Austin, yes, but there's been no response. I suspect that the Rangers are stretched thin, too, as are all the other forces of law and order on the frontier. Just like Her Majesty's forces were when we were trying to combat the tide of piracy in the Caribbean.
But you defeated Malone there. You captured him and sent him to prison.
I was a much different man then. Those days seemed to belong to a completely different life.
My uncle and I just need a little help. Somebody who's a match for Malone and his men. How about it, Mr. Morgan? How would you like a job riding for Diamondback?
I'm not a cowhand.
I'm not talking about that, and you know it. I'm talking about gun work. There's going to be plenty of it in Rattlesnake Valley.
At first, Malone seemed to think that I was a hired gun. Is that what you think too, Miss Starbird?
Well, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
I don't believe you. I saw the way you blasted that rattler's head off with one shot. And I watched while you nearly broke Wolfram's neck. You're a professional fighting man, Mr. Morgan.
I'm sorry, but you've got me wrong. I'm not looking for work. Especially not gun work.
If you think that Malone will pay you more...
I wouldn't work for Malone if he had all the pirate treasure of Blackbeard and Captain Kidd put together.
I believe you've misjudged our visitor, Diana. And perhaps insulted him a bit, too.
I'm not insulted. But this isn't my war.
Of course not. Well, then, if we can't recruit you, what can we do for you?
My horse needs some rest.
He'll have it, along with plenty of grain and water, for as long as you like.
And I'm running low on supplies. I planned on picking up some in the next settlement I came to.
We can spare enough to get you out of the valley and across the desert east of here. There's no need for you to stop in Bristol.
What's on the other side of that desert?
Some more hills, and beyond them the railroad that runs from San Antonio to El Paso. There's a flag stop where you can board the train. We drive our cattle there when it's time to ship them to market. The desert's not as bad as it looks. There's water there if you know where to find it, and a man on horseback can cross it in a day.
Sounds like my only real problem will be making it to the other end of the valley without Malone catching me. He only ordered his men to leave me alone for the rest of today.
You should have negotiated a longer truce. He likely would have gone along with it, believing that he'd never have to honor his word because either Wolfram or Greavy would kill you, whichever of them you chose to face in battle.
Yeah, I didn't think of it at the time.
The Mexican woman, Carmelita, came in with a pitcher of lemonade and three glasses. She poured the cool, refreshing drinks and served them.
You're welcome to stay as long as you like, Morgan. I admit I was a bit suspicious of you at first, but now that I've heard the story, I appreciate you seeing to it that my niece was able to return home safely from her foolish foray.
Wait a minute. He didn't save me. Malone wouldn't have hurt me or allowed his men to bother me. You know that, Uncle Owen. If anything, I saved Mr. Morgan's hide by being there. Malone was putting on a show for me by offering that bargain to the kid.
Yes, well, you shouldn't have been there in the first place.
I'm going to my room.
The kid and Starbird didn't say anything as Diana left the room.
I'm afraid my brother raised his daughter with a rather free hand. She's headstrong, impulsive, lacking in self-discipline, and accustomed to getting her own way. I apologize for any offense she may have given you, Morgan.
None taken. I'm sure she's not much like the English ladies you've known, Captain, but an English lady might not survive very long out here.
You've been to England?
I have. My mother and I did the European tour a number of years ago.
My God. You're not a sad old tramp, are you?
I wouldn't go so far as to say that. I've been doing a lot of drifting recently.
Well, how would a Texan put it? I hope you'll lighten set for a spell while you're visiting Diamondback.
Thank you, Captain. I believe I will, and I'm much obliged for the hospitality.
Starbird had said that he would have Rockland bring in the kid's rifles and saddlebags from the barn, then call Carmelita and order her to show the kid to one of the empty bedrooms on the second floor. The room was large, airy, and comfortable, with a pair of gauzy curtains covering the windows. A four-poster bed, a couple of chairs, a washstand, and a wardrobe completed the furnishings. The windows afforded a view to the west of the house, toward the mountains.
Thank you, Carmelita.
As she started to leave, he gave in to curiosity and stopped her.
I have a question.
Si, señor?
How long has Captain Starbird been like he is? His legs, I mean.
No habla, señor.
That was an outright lie, and the kid knew it. Downstairs, Starbird had given Carmelita her orders in English, and she had seemed to understand them perfectly. But her loyalty to her employer meant that she didn't want to talk about the captain, he supposed, so he didn't press the question.
Gracias.
She left the room. Morgan's muscles were starting to ache from the battle with Wolfram, even though he hadn't absorbed as much punishment as he might have expected to in a brawl like that. He'd been riding for days, too, and was tired. He took off his gun belt, coiled it, and placed it on one of the chairs next to the bed. Then he pulled off his boots and shirt and stood next to the washstand. He stepped swiftly to the chair and bent slightly to slide the Colt from its holster. Instinct prompted that move. He didn't have to think about it. Gun in hand, he went to the door.
Who is it?
Diana Starbird.
Diana's eyes widened slightly, but whether it was from the sight of his bare chest or the gun in his hand, or both, he didn't know.
What can I do for you, Miss Starbird?
I just wanted to see that you've gotten settled in properly and that the room is comfortable.
Very much so. Although I haven't tried out the bed yet. I was just about to do that.
Well, don't expect me to join you.
The thought never entered my mind.
I'll just bet.
She turned on her heel and stalked off down the hall. The kid eased the door closed. What he had said to Diana wasn't strictly, completely true. She was a very attractive woman, and he had the same appetites as any normal man, even though he didn't intend to indulge them anytime soon. He wasn't sure you could put a time limit on a period of mourning. Say that a certain number of months or years was proper and another wasn't. He was sure that the girl called Elena had expected him to bed her while they were traveling together, but that had never happened. Come to think of it, maybe that was one reason she had left him in Santa Fe. The kid knew that when the time was right, he would be aware of it. Even though he was drawn to Diana Starbird, he wasn't going to take advantage of the hospitality she and her uncle had offered him. He slid his gun back in its holster and stretched out on the bed. His intention was just to rest for a while, but he dozed off without meaning to.